On this week's show, we're talking the legacy of John Elway, general manager, his early successes, and his 3 years of failures, including the never-ending search for a post-Peyton Manning quarterback, and why it's all gone so wrong. Plus, a little bit on how Freddie Kitchens will use all those running backs in Cleveland, and some free agency talk. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. And Andy, we're trying a little something different today.
We are. We are going to have an in-depth conversation, an in-depth back and forth about John Elway, the general manager.
We are still going to hit a couple of news points at the end of the show, so stick around if you want a more general take on the NFL news of the day. But John Elway very much in the news with the Joe Flacco trade, and we're sort of looking at his legacy as a general manager. And we're going to start this thing by turning back the clock a little bit to February 2016. The Broncos had just won Super Bowl 50. Andy, you had no idea who Slash of Guns N' Roses fame was. And we were discussing John Elway as a potential Hall of Fame player plus Hall of Fame executive. Those were the days.
Those were the days. And then since then, the Broncos have gone 9-7, 5-11, 6-10. They've finished third or worst every season there in the AFC West. So it's going to be an interesting conversation because Elway's, I think, a good litmus test, given the disparity in his track record. It's a good litmus test of what we expect out of a GM and how we decipher what's successful and what's not successful with a GM.
Well, let's start with the good. Let's start with Super Bowl 50 here. And obviously, they had been to Super Bowl 48 before that, where they got spanked by the Seahawks. But hey, getting to the Super Bowl is an accomplishment in and of itself. Elway had come in. He was taking over a team that had missed the playoffs 5 straight years. Was coming off a 4-12 season. He resisted the siren call of Tebow Mania, and he brought in Peyton Manning. He won the Peyton Manning sweepstakes, and I mean, that right there is a big deal.
And that's a huge talking point on two different fronts with Elway. I guess the first one, real quick, I know my opinion on it. I think I know yours, but I want to be sure. How much credit do we give him on a scale of 1 to 10, so to speak, for landing Peyton Manning?
Well, I think there's something unique to it, because Peyton had his choices. So it was a recruiting trip. I don't think anyone was sitting here saying, we don't think Peyton Manning can play, we're not interested in Peyton Manning. So maybe some people were saying Peyton Manning was going to fall off. They were worried about the neck problems. But I think it involved a recruitment. And I think Elway did that successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there were a lot of teams wanting Manning. Some teams, I'm sure, had him off their board, so to speak, and a lot of teams wanted Manning. And I think it's easy to say, well, he had Peyton Manning for those years, and so that's why the team was good. But in that case, I remember thinking at the time, if John Elway were not John Elway, if he was just a Joe Blow GM, there's no way Peyton Manning was going to Denver. So Elway earned the Peyton Manning, and then he built around Manning, I think, appropriately up front, and then, as we'll get into a little bit in 2015. But the big part of that whole Manning thing that never got talked about, Gary, is what you said about Tim Tebow. We forget what a superstar Tim Tebow was. And you talk about, like, Kaepernick now is the polarizing guy. Tebow back then, for different reasons, but he was the polarizing guy. If you said Tebow can't play, you were deemed a hater. And if you said Tebow was the greatest in the world, you were deemed a hater, depending on what side of the fence the other person's sitting on. And the reality of it was Tebow could not play, and yet he was winning these games. And Elway knew it wasn't sustainable. And to get rid of that guy at that moment was nearly impossible, except they got Peyton Manning to come along, and people kind of almost forgot about Tim Tebow in Denver. Elway never had to face the music with parting ways with Tim Tebow, thanks to Peyton Manning.
He really didn't. And, if you don't remember that Tebow run well, I mean, it was, you almost had to suspend disbelief and just enjoy the ride because it made no sense. And Elway was right to recognize it made no sense, and there was nothing to build off of. It was just It was a series of flukes. Whether it was, Marion Barber losing a late fumble and the Broncos scoop it up. Tebow obviously made a very nice throw to beat the Steelers in overtime in that playoff game. He deserves credit for that. But there was no sustainable offense at that point. And the coaching staff, of course, was completely scrambling to scrape together an offense that probably didn't have a whole lot they could expand off of after that season.
Well, no, they were running the ball 50 times a game. It's what we saw with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. It was that times 20 more percent, 30, 40 more percent. I remember I was watching film in my dad's office. I was fresh out of college at this point. And he owned the building downtown in Boise, and one of the tenants, they were always coming by and popping in and taking a look. And I was sitting there in the front room. I almost looked like the secretary, except I'm watching football. And one of the tenants popped in and said, "Oh, I see you're watching the Broncos." And I said, "Yeah, it's a lady who's about 50 years old." She goes, "Boy, Tim Tebow's something else, isn't he?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, he is." And she said whatever someone who doesn't watch football says there. And I said, "Well, I'm not sure he's the player people think he is." And then she goes, "But he's really inspirational, isn't he?" And I remember saying, I wanted to say to her, "You're 20 years older than him. What? And you're two states away. What do you mean he's inspirational? How can a 23-year-old be inspirational to a locker room?"
It was fun. I will say I thought it was legitimately fun, the Tim Tebow era or the brief Tim Tebow run there. It was like a movie. It didn't make sense. It was magic. It really was magic that they were winning games with that guy. And it would have gotten really ugly. You're right. Had they not found the right quarterback afterward, Elway might not have gotten out of the first couple seasons.
Well, and it's not just the right quarterback. I mean, it was Peyton Manning. He's the biggest star quarterback in the NFL at that time, right neck and neck with Tom Brady. No neck and neck, pun intended there. But what do you think Elway would have done if Manning didn't come along?
I don't know. The Titans were obviously very much in that race for Manning. Elway went out. I don't know what the answer was. You probably would have had to go to the draft, and you would have taken a lot of heat if you missed, or you had a guy who needed to do a reset, because you were basically you were walking away from a quarterback who had gotten to the divisional round, the conference semifinals the previous year. So yeah, they landed Peyton Manning. Now we're going to talk about how that maybe covered up some offensive deficiencies later in the show, but. It was more the defense that Elway built, and I think that's what was sort of the calling card of that Super Bowl team, especially as Manning sort of started to continue to dwindle. But he drafted Von Miller. He signed Chris Harris as an undrafted free agent. He made two big-ticket signings to Marcus Ware and Aqib Talib, and that was probably the best defense we saw. Seattle was up there when they won Super Bowl 48. You'd probably have to go back to like the Ravens of 2000 if we're talking about dominant defenses in the relatively modern Super Bowl era.
Yeah, what they had, we talk about it all the time on the show. You have to have man-to-man corners or cover corners, and you have to have edge rushers. You have to have at least one of those things. And what Elway had with that defense, once it was all said and done, was both of those things at the highest of levels. And then they had a lot of speed and physicality right up the middle of that defense as well. Linebacker, and then he all of a sudden fell out of the NFL a few years ago. But T.J. Ward, at that time, was one of the best all-around safeties in the league.
They won the Super Bowl, became the first man ever to win the Super Bowl as a quarterback and an executive, as a general manager, and sort of all went downhill from there. We'll get to that in one moment here. But first, just wanted to tell you about Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 Most Popular, With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. All right, well, after the Super Bowl, things fell apart a little bit. You had Peyton retire. You had Malik Jackson and Danny Trevathan got poached. Brock Osweiler, who we'll get to a little more in depth, ends up getting poached by the Texans, and he had been the heir apparent to Peyton Manning. I guess my question to you, Andy, is how much does having Peyton Manning mask some of the deficiencies they had on offense? I mean, between Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas looking like superstars, and really the offensive line that has struggled the past three seasons, it looks a whole lot better when you have Peyton back there getting rid of the ball so quickly.
Sure, of course, but I guess I would accuse you almost of kind of leading the witness here. Like, let's say Peyton Manning masks every deficiency you can imagine. Who the hell cares? They won a Super Bowl, Peyton. I mean, your quarterback's supposed to mask all the deficiencies around him. So the way the question's presented almost feels like we're faulting Elway. Like, well, it really wasn't a good roster because Peyton Manning masked deficiencies. They built the roster around Manning, and they won 12 games or more every year with him.
Was it a good roster, though? I won't lead.
Two Super Bowl appearances, four division titles.
The offensive side of the ball. Was the offensive side of the ball good enough?
Well, I remember that year they went to the Super Bowl in Seattle, beat them. They were one of the best offenses of all time that year.
I think it's just agree with me.
Let me ask you this way: are you being negative when you say Manning masked weaknesses on the offense? Is that a pejorative towards John Elway?
I think he masked especially a subpar offensive line. I think that was a big deal. Well, I think you could even go back to the Indianapolis days for Peyton and see how he made an offensive line that was maybe middle of the road look pretty good. I think you saw the same type of thing in Denver where, to an extent it's built around Peyton, but they also had to build beyond Peyton a little bit because, Peyton was coming off a neck injury and he was in his late 30s at that point. He wasn't going to play forever.
Sure, but my argument would be John Elway knows that the offensive line can be masked by Peyton Manning. That's part of the reason you're paying Manning all that money. That's an example of a quarterback making the guys around him better. And I'm sure Elway's building the roster accordingly. I had this conversation with Ryan Grigson one time when he was the Colts general manager. It was right after Manning had left and Grigson's running the show. And I said, do you need to pay for great tackles if you have a great quarterback? And, that's the theory. I'm sure our listeners have heard us talk about that all the time. Do you invest in your offensive line if the quarterback gets the ball out quickly? And Grigson, by the way, he thought it was dependent on your scheme. And their scheme, I think, at the time they had Andrew Luck, they were a deeper drop-back team, so they did feel they needed the protection. But that's beside the point, or it's, at least the point moves to Denver. They had a quick drop-back scheme with Manning, so they felt they didn't need to invest in the protection. At least I'm making that argument. The only thing that would work against is they did draft Tyson Brailo in the second round in 2015, Manning's last year, and they drafted Michael Schofield in 2014 in the third round. Neither guy worked out, but I guess Elway was making some investments along the O-line, but you don't need to go out and try to find the next Larry Allen in free agency or draft a guy top five overall if you have Manning back there.
Well, you mentioned the drafts. The number one criticism of Elway we're going to get to, which is the lack of a quarterback in the post-Peyton era here. The drafts have been a little bit weak, though. I mean, he has, especially in that second to third round range, he just hasn't really hit anyone in those mid-rounds that would really jump out at you, or at least the hit rate has been pretty low. So we are going to get into the roster, but I do want to talk about because this, to me, is the most underrated part of the Broncos' relative collapse here. If you had asked Peyton Manning in the aftermath of Super Bowl 50, who's going to be your head coach in 2019? I'm sure he would have said Gary Kubiak. I'm sure they saw no reason that this was going to stop. Kubiak, of course, had replaced John Fox in 2011. Fox was Peyton's first coach. Kubiak stepped down during the following season, or excuse me, after the following season because of health issues, and that's when they had to go out and ended up landing Vance Joseph. But had Kubiak stayed on, because you've had so much changeover with the coaching staff since Kubiak stepped down after that 9-7 season in 2016, that title defense that fell short. I mean, are we talking about something different here at this point?
We might be. We might be, because Kubiak has had a lot of success at different levels. I think he's a pretty good head coach at the time. I think he has that CEO's understanding, and he had a very defined offense. That was one issue under Vance Joseph, that Mike McCoy was their coordinator on offense for the first 10 games. Bill Musgrave replaced him right there. That tells you how well the Mike McCoy experiment went. The complaint about McCoy was it was a cobbled together offense. They never had an identity. You need an identity when you're building a team. A general manager has to know what he's looking for, what style of player he wants, and they did not have that offensive identity after Gary Kubiak left. And they weren't planning on Kubiak leaving either. So they weren't like drafting guys that were going to one day give them the identity. I assume they were going all in on the Kubiak model, which is outside zone, play action, rollouts, yep, bootlegs, that kind of team.
So he had Kubiak steps down. And I find it pretty fascinating that Kubiak is the one offensive head coach that Elway has hired, and he's hired four now. Kubiak steps out. They had a shot at Kyle Shanahan, and there were whispers about Kyle Shanahan. And I also don't want to sit here and say Kyle Shanahan has been the new Bill Belichick out in San Francisco. He's still very much unproven, but you certainly like what he does offensively out in San Francisco. And you just kind of wonder, you know, Kyle Shanahan, he was the sentimental choice. There was such a narrative drive behind Kyle Shanahan going to Denver and becoming John Elway's head coach. And Elway went with Vance Joseph and passed on Shanahan. I mean, that's another thing. Had Kyle Shanahan been there, you're not blowing up this offense to the point where it was blown up might be too harsh, but you're not changing the offense to the extent that it was changed once Vance Joseph came in with Mike McCoy.
No, you're not, because Shanahan would have been a little bit of a continuation. He probably would have taken Kubiak's scheme, and it's I don't know if their verbiage would be the same, but it's similar enough stylistically. I think Shanahan's got a little bit more of an expansive passing game than Kubiak would have had. Shanahan's life would have been way different, wouldn't it, if he'd gone to Denver? Because the pressure of that job versus San Francisco and the Bay Area, where everybody in San Francisco knows this is a very long rebuilding project. It's going to take a couple years to get going. And in Denver, that's not how it would have been perceived. And by the way, if you're not getting going right away, you're also getting compared to your Super Bowl winning father. So I imagine Shanahan's glad he didn't get that job. The question is, do you think Elway's glad that Shanahan didn't get that job now, knowing what we know?
I think considering the new offensive coordinator there now, I think there might be some buyer's remorse there. And
Rick Scangarello, the Shanahan's QB coach, is the offensive coordinator there now.
We'll talk about Vance Joseph real quickly here. Obviously, we talked about him quite a bit in December and January, but Vance Joseph started 3-1 in 2017, and then they had the 8-game losing streak. It completely fell apart. Mike McCoy lost his job 10 games into the season. As Andy mentioned, Bill Musgrave takes over. You know, Vance Joseph never had the quarterback, and we're going to get to the quarterbacks in a moment here, but he never had the quarterback. Do you feel like he got a fair shot, especially because Elway, it was a fairly bold hire to bring him from Miami?
It's hard to know. I mean, Kubiak didn't have the quarterback either the year after the Super Bowl, and they still went 9-7. They were a competitive team. That's probably not good enough in Elway's book. They're not out there to go 9-7. But it's better than 5-11 or 6-10.
6-10.
So what we don't know about coaches is how good they are at teaching. We can see their scheme. We can see what they're doing from afar. We can see the press conferences. You kind of get a sense for a coach about the way the players talk about them over a course of time. All of that, though, those players are talking on the record, and they're being guarded when they speak. So we get a very limit. This is why I don't criticize coaches very often. We get such a limited view of what they can do and what they are doing. So I don't know. From the outside looking in, I probably would have given Vance Joseph one more year, but that's just from the outside looking in. I don't know what kind of teacher he was, what kind of teacher his assistants were, and that's an enormous deal. I had one GM tell me once, he was a failed GM, and he said, I made a lot of mistakes getting players, but the biggest mistake I made was finding the wrong coach. That's a big, big deal in the NFL. Coaching is so much more important than people realize.
Well, you got Vic Fangio now, and Rick Scangarello, the Kyle Shanahan disciple, comes in to run the offense. We got to talk about the quarterbacks. A lot of people would only talk about the quarterbacks at this point. And I do want to kick this off with a couple of quotes here. Robert Klemko did a really good piece last September for us at the MMQB. The title of it is John Elway is Looking for Himself. So obviously everyone knows Elway's background as the historic Broncos quarterback and one of the greatest of all time. He's also the son of a scout, Jack Elway. Legend has it Jack Elway once banged the table for Drew Brees because he saw past the arm strength and the size and some of the things that people held against Brees when he was coming out of Purdue. So Robert had talked to, among other people, John Lynch and Terrell Davis about Elway and his struggle to land a quarterback. At this point, he's just signed Case Keenum. John Lynch's quote was, by his own admission, John Lynch is terrible at scouting safeties. And Lynch says, I look at a safety and I say, I'm jaded on this one. Help me out. People think you should know that position so well, but you hold it to a higher standard that can be unrealistic. Terrell Davis said there aren't a lot of John Elways out there. We look at Michael Jordan and say he should be able to find and identify the best basketball players in the world, but it doesn't work that way. The problem is it's hard for John to see a quarterback, and the kid can't do what he could do because he thinks everyone should be able to do it. So let's take sort of a one-by-one look at the quarterbacks that Elway brought in for the post-Peyton Manning era, and obviously he's still searching for that guy. Brock Osweiler, I don't know. Brock Osweiler got blown out of proportion a little bit because of the contract he ended up getting in Houston. For me, the bottom line with Osweiler was he was a second-round pick. The Texans did not give him a contract that was just unreal, sort of top of the market kind of deal. They gave him a deal that was essentially a 2-year deal. They jumped out after 1 year and swung that trade with the Browns to unload him. But Elway did look at Osweiler and did not beat that Texans bid, that sort of mid-level bid, that sort of borderline starter bid that the Texans made for Osweiler. Elway looked at that and said, we're not doing that. We'll let him walk and we'll figure it out.
Which tells you a lot, because Elway knew more about Osweiler than anybody else at the time. And remember, Houston made that deal without ever having met Osweiler. At the time, Peter King, he's a guy over at NBC now. he wrote the story about
elsewhere.
How they took a leap of faith on Brock Osweiler in Houston, and they fell flat on their faces and splattered. But Elway offered Osweiler. Let's not treat like Elway completely walked away from Osweiler and had the gall to do that, because he offered Osweiler, the reports I believe were 3 years, $45 million, and we don't know how that was structured and how much was guaranteed.
Yeah.
That was part of the problem in Houston. Yeah, Osweiler's deal had a lot of guarantees in it, so he's a lot of dead money, or there, at least the way it was structured created dead money in Houston. We don't know if that was the issue in Denver or not, but that would have made Osweiler about the 18th highest paid QB in the NFL, give or take. So right in the middle of the pack, maybe lower middle.
Yeah.
So Elway's telling you.
I will say it. When you say 18th, you're also, you're factoring in the guys on rookie deals. So you're almost pushing that down to like 25th at this point.
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of guys who haven't had that second contract crack yet.
But Elway's also looking at those rookie deal guys as well, because he ultimately went with one. He's gone with others before. So if those rookie deals didn't exist, Osweiler, would he still be there or not? Because the alternative, when you've got a guy like Osweiler who you think's middle tier, is, well, he's middle tier, but he costs three times more than the rookie who might be top tier one day, might be top tier right away. It behooves a GM to go chase the rookie quarterback because of the salary wage limitations.
Trevor Siemian comes in next. That was weird. That's still weird to me. Trevor Siemian.
What's weird about it?
He was not really a prospect. And look, the greatest quarterback of all time was a 6th-round pick. But Siemian was a late-round pick. He was just sort of there. He seemed destined for a career as a backup. And then all of a sudden, he was following up Peyton Manning, basically. He was the guy for Gary Kubiak that season. What was the ceiling with Siemian in your mind, especially had Kubiak stayed around and you had a little continuity with that offense?
The ceiling was what it appeared from the outside. Siemian did not have a great arm. His decision-making, it got better over the course of that season, but it was not remarkable. So he very much had to run a highly schemed offense. So he's a placeholding QB. Paxton Lynch was who they drafted in 2016.
Yeah.
And Siemian had been the 2015 7th-round pick, so they never had plans to make Siemian the guy. It's interesting, though, that he wound up becoming the guy on the year that Paxton Lynch did not work out as a rookie. Because remember, when Lynch was coming out of Memphis, everybody and their brothers said, well, he's very raw. He's going to need a few years, which people seem to forget because after a few years pass, they don't like that he hasn't done anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happened with Paxton Lynch. You would have guessed it'd be like a Josh McCown type of guy somewhere on the roster here.
Yeah, and Paxton Lynch, I would argue Paxton Lynch is the only quarterback since Peyton Manning that Elway made a major investment in. He took him in the 1st round. As we know from again, that guy Peter King, who we used to know, he was in the Cowboys' war room for that draft, and the Cowboys were desperate to get Paxton Lynch. They were very high on Paxton Lynch, and the Broncos ended up snagging him. This was my criticism with the Lynch pick. I don't have a big criticism of Lynch as a prospect. He was a developmental prospect. He was going to need time. He never even got a third season in the NFL, which, I mean, I think a lot of people would have told you maybe year three is the first year you could have conceivably looked at him as a starter. But they had 3 offense coordinators come through there. But not only that, they were built to win now. And to bring in a developmental prospect, that is not a win-now move. He was not a win-now quarterback for them.
I agree with you. And remember, he was amidst all that chaos with the lack of identity on offense. He's had a lot of different, what is it? I think you sent it to me earlier. Was it 3 coordinators in 2 years is what Paxton Lynch has had?
Yeah, 3 coordinators in 2 years, yep.
So that's a hard scenario for any guy to develop out of. He's now a backup in Seattle, which that's kind of interesting as well because he's so different than Russell Wilson stylistically. But I hear what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying on that. But there's this narrative, and we're feeding into it with this very show, that Elway always been on this long search for his QB. You're right. Paxton Lynch is really, since Manning, Lynch is the only one that Elway's made a major play for. I don't count Brock Osweiler. I know Osweiler is a 2nd-round pick. I don't think I count him, though. I don't think I count that as a major play at a quarterback.
I don't count it because it's a 2nd-round pick, and they didn't match the mid-level contract to keep him.
But they had tried to. I mean, a 2nd-round pick's it's not nothing. I mean, that's still a high. You can get quality talent at a 2nd-round pick. So I think they were optimistic he could develop in that backup role. Never did. But I don't think that's a big swing.
I think very rarely would you look at a 2nd-round pick and say this is a franchise quarterback. When you take a guy in the 1st round, you're basically saying this is our guy at some point. If not now, this is our guy in the near future.
Well, that guy Jack Elway was banging the tables for, he was a 2nd-round pick, but that's probably the outlier.
Technically, he was 32nd overall since there were 31 teams at that time.
Yeah.
So I guess the hypothetical, and I know you love hypotheticals, Andy, so we'll get into this, was I remember during that draft, during draft season, and you never know what's true and what's not true, but there was a lot of smoke, and this wasn't one of those big rumors that literally everyone was talking about. There was a lot of smoke coming through that Dak Prescott was who Elway was really interested in. And Dak had an interesting draft season. He had the DUI arrest, for which he was later acquitted. He also, I guess, missed a flight to Denver and ended up missing a meeting with the Broncos at that point. And Prescott obviously fell all the way to the fourth round after the Cowboys missed out on Connor Cook. So he was plan C for the Cowboys. But I do want to kind of ask you, we've talked so much about Dak over the last couple of years here, but one of the things we talked about is Dak's development sort of went very smoothly because he had such a good offensive line and such a good supporting cast around him. Had you dropped Dak into this sort of not only lesser talented offense in Denver, but also with all the turnover with the coaching staff, I think it's fair to say Dak would not be Dak right now, but yeah. What do you think Dak would be? Would he be a guy we'd be looking at saying, maybe he's a starter down the line, or would he be in Paxton Lynch territory but looking to get a training camp invite?
Yeah, he'd probably be – I mean, it depends if he would have gotten the shot to be the starter in Denver. Let's say he fell to Denver somehow in those middle rounds. I know this, Gary. Somebody I respect within the NFL – said to me in 2016, and this person didn't say that. These are my words right here. I think Prescott's a more talented player than Trevor Siemian, and I don't think many people would refute that. I don't think it's by a huge margin, but Prescott's a little better thrower. He's certainly a better athlete, a better mover. He's got great out-of-pocket vision, which is what Simeon's strength probably was when he was playing well. So what somebody told me, though, is you could argue that the Broncos ask more of Trevor Siemian than the Cowboys ask of Dak Prescott. That was in 2016 when the conditions were so favorable. And that's the way the guy said, that's another way of saying right here now, Simeon's the better quarterback. He's just in a much worse situation. So I think Dak Prescott, someone I trust, I didn't disagree at the time with that guy. It's all hypotheticals, you said, which is why I don't like these things. You're right. But I think Dak Prescott would have been probably closer to Trevor Siemian than he would be to the franchise QB that he's about to be labeled whenever he gets his big contract from Dallas.
So Case Keenum ends up being the guy last season, and it sort of worked against the, you know, there ended up being a narrative with Elway that he wants the super, super tall quarterbacks. He gets 6'7 Brock Osweiler and 6'7 Paxton Lynch. Keenum's a guy he had tried to acquire when Keenum was a backup with the Rams, his backup Nick Foles at that point. So Elway, we know he can see past that sort of prototype, that sort of giant pocket passer prototype. He liked Keenum. Keenum just didn't. He didn't work out last year. I mean, he didn't recapture the magic he had in Minnesota, which I think we all saw as a possible scenario.
He didn't. He did not have great command as a passer, and that led to an inconsistent offense, and I understand why we're going to be talking about another QB here in a second for Denver.
All right, before we get to that, Bradley Chubb ended up going fifth overall last year. There were a lot of rumors that Gary Kubiak loved Baker Mayfield, and the Broncos were maybe in on Baker Mayfield. Again, it's draft season. People throw out crazy crap all the time, so you don't know if it's necessarily true. But we do know that the Broncos had a chance to grab either Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, or even Lamar Jackson, who ended up going with the last pick of the first round. But Bradley Chubb is their guy at this point. We've seen what they've been scrambling to do at quarterback. If you had to redo it, would you have gone with one of the quarterbacks if you were running the Broncos war room?
No, I would not. Here's what I think Elway's logic was on that. Is we won a Super Bowl with Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, and we've got some other guys around it, but we know if you have two guys off the edge, two top-shelf superstars, mega pass rushers, you can do a lot defensively. You might even become a dominant defense just on that alone, depending on how solid you are, at least at other positions. So that's option A, and I'm sure he was very comfortable and sold on Chubb completely. Option B is we gamble on a quarterback. Those guys you mentioned are a gamble. Josh Allen's a huge gamble stylistically. we gamble on a QB and then have to build the offense around him, and we don't know what we have on defense. It's just such a sure thing on the defensive side. And if that thing comes true, if you get what you want defensively, I think you have some leeway offensively. I think Elway might, Gary, I think he might ultimately believe, and this is what John Fox used to believe, I heard, when he was in Denver, but in the Carolina years and some of the earlier years, and even the Giants, is you can get by with an average quarterback if you've got the right setup and situation around him. And I wonder if John Elway, if part of him doesn't believe that himself. Because remember, the year they won the Super Bowl 2015, Peyton Manning by then was probably – he was an average quarterback. He was not your average quarterback. He ran the show so thoroughly, and he was a field general. But he was an average quarterback by then.
Before we get to Joe Flacco, I just want to ask this in general, and I don't know if there's a great answer to it, but finding a quarterback involves luck. I mean, it just does. And you look at the last three Super Bowl champions who are not the Denver Broncos here with Peyton Manning. Tom Brady, sixth-round pick, obviously. You had the Eagles one with Nick Foles, who was absolutely on the scrap heap and no one else wanted him at that point. And then you go back to Super Bowl 48 with Russell Wilson, who was the third-round pick. Those are not quarterbacks that everyone was chasing and desperate to get. And with the exception of maybe Russell Wilson, you would say Foles and Brady were both brought in to be backup quarterbacks to already established franchise guys there. Can you give Elway a bit of a pass and just say, I mean, look, at some point you just got to catch a break.
Yeah, I mean, But let's say that's true. Let's say everything you said is 100% true. Mm-hmm. What now? What do you do then? How do we go out and get quarterbacks in? If it's, you basically said it's a form of a crapshoot. So are you saying you don't invest big in quarterbacks?
It is a little bit. I mean, some teams choose right. A lot of teams choose right. The Broncos have not picked at the top of the draft with the exception of last year. I don't know. I think it's tough to praise teams for getting mid-round or late-round picks who become superstars and say Elway is hopeless in the quarterback search at this point.
That's a fair point.
That does bring us to Joe Flacco, who I'll just say right off the top, Andy, before we get into this, I could not believe the level of reaction to Joe Flacco being acquired by the Broncos here. He's clearly a bridge guy in my opinion. Should he be able to recapture his 2012 to 2014 form or whatever it would be, I guess then you have a conversation. But I just want to put this out for comparison. This time last year, the Browns paid Tyrod Taylor. They acquired him. They were going to pay him $16.5 million for last season, and they traded the number 65 pick of the draft for him in a better draft than we have this year. Joe Flacco is on a year-to-year deal. This is essentially a 3 one-year deals he's on at this point. There is no guaranteed money left on the deal. He'll make $18.5 million in 2019. That is assuming that the Broncos do keep him and start the season with him. They traded what will, once compensatory picks are in, be the 110th pick of the draft. They paid significantly less for Joe Flacco than the Browns did for Tyrod Taylor last year, and we all kind of accepted Tyrod Taylor was a very short time bridge time. It was a bridge quarterback, a backup, basically, for the Browns. So I'm just not sure why this is being treated as Joe Flacco is here to be the Broncos quarterback for the next three decades.
They got a much better deal for Flacco because Flacco, you can do almost everything with offense. I know he's not as mobile as Taylor, but he's mobile enough. And as you scheme your offense, he's mobile enough if we're talking passing game. You're not running read option with Flacco like you do with Taylor. But he's mobile enough for scheming your passing game. You can move the pocket with him. You can roll him out. And when you get to that kind of designing, which is the extent that you can go, you're not really planning for a quarterback's sandlot playmaking ability. When you think, okay, how can we build an offense with him? Well, average mobility at QB gives you the same kind of offense as exceptional mobility does. The exceptional mobility gives you playmaking prowess later. So I think Flacco is an easier guy to build around as well. I'm with you. I don't know why this is not a world-changing move by Denver. I do think it's evidence that Elway believes they can compete right now, though.
It certainly gives them an option right now. The assumption is they will move on from Case Keenum. They'll find a trade partner. If not, they will let him go. So that will take $11 million off the book on Keenum's $21 million salary for this year. So for all intents and purposes, once they move on from Keenum, they will have $28.5 million invested in sort of veteran QB TBA. I guess not TBA because it's going to be Flacco, but between Flacco and Keenum dead money, that's $28.5 million, which is not it's not ideal, but it's not insane. And it's 1 year. But it does not stop them from drafting a quarterback. They picked 10th overall this year, and if they want to bring in a rookie, this is a scenario that we've seen a lot of teams go with at this point. But let's talk about
Elway's. He's got some freedom right now too, in all of this. Let's keep that in mind. Ownership is up in the air with Pat Bowlen's situation, and a transitioning owner, whoever it is, and I think Joe Ellis is probably running their football operations. He's been a big wig in their front office for a number of years. With the state of things, it's very unlikely that someone's going to fire John Elway in Mile High City with everything up in the air too.
He's got pretty good job security, no matter what we have discussed on this show today. But let's just talk about Flacco. Let's assume he's going to be the week one starter, which is a fairly safe assumption, even if they bring in another first round pick to replace him in the near future. But Scangarello comes from that Kyle Shanahan system. A lot of people talked up, Kubiak. Look at what Flacco did under Kubiak. That was arguably, obviously, his Super Bowl postseason run was his best season. But if you're just talking about regular season, 2014 might have been Flacco's best season.
Mm-hmm. Flacco was a better player physically back then. No one would refute that part. He's had a lot of injuries lately. I would argue he was a better player mentally back then as well, which seems bizarre because we just assume, the longer they play, the smarter they get. But that's not true of every guy. He might be smarter, but he doesn't play that way. He left a lot of throws on the field in Baltimore the last couple of years. He didn't play on schedule. He made some. If you didn't know who he was, you'd think he's a guy in his second or third year in the league.
I honestly think, and I'd love to talk to him about it after his career is over, and maybe he's a little more open about it. The ACL injury, I think he just hasn't been the same quarterback since then, and perhaps he also is just not comfortable in the offense that Marty Mornhinweg had him playing in. But I think mechanically, he fell off so badly when he came back from the knee injury. I don't know if it's fear of re-injuring that knee. He has some of the worst habits of drifting back for no particular reason when he throws, which is kind of ironic, kind of coincidental, because the guy that Elway is most often linked to in this draft class, Drew Lock, who will be we're probably going to be calling him Drew Luck for the next 10 years, but Drew Lock from Missouri has that exact same terrible habit. And has the same kind of arm talent that young Flacco did. Probably a little more athletic, though. But mechanically, Flacco has just fallen off.
Yeah, and you have to be able to play with bodies around you in the pocket. And that was also part of some of his inconsistencies in recent years. I did think he got a little better at that at times last year than he was the year before. But we're talking about a guy who's not close to what he was in 2014 or that 2012 playoff run, of course.
So they'll cross their fingers that they can unlock that that old Flacco form. This is what we have now with this offense, or excuse me, this roster in general. Start with defense. You have Von Miller and you have Bradley Chubb. You have a very good foundation with the pass rush. Chris Harris coming off the broken leg, age 30. We assume he's going to stick around. They could save some money and move on, but if it looks like he's going to be healthy, I would assume they would bring him back. Bradley Roby is a free agent. They'll have to decide whether they want to retain him. I do wonder what Roby's market is going to be, because I think you would have said he was ascending until last season. Not that he was terrible, but I think he clearly had a down year in 2018.
Yeah, his bad moments were terrible. He didn't have a ton of bad moments, but he had enough of them that I would agree he was not. He had a down year, a disappointing season, and I am really curious to see what he gets on the open market. There actually are some decent. This whole free agent market this year, it'll get whittled down by guys who re-sign and get franchise tag, but it's a pretty strong market overall, and there are some decent corners out there too. So it'll be interesting to see. Do you still think Denver then? Is Elway, if Elway believes that they have a ready-to-win-now defense, and I think he does believe that, is he being reasonable in that assumption?
I feel almost like you can keep saying it as long as you have Von Miller and Chris Harris, and they are still reasonably within their primes. And I feel almost silly saying that because it's two guys. Miller combined with Chubb obviously very much gives you something, but it's tough to bank on two players on it in a sport where there are 11 on the field at the same time.
But the things that teams do to try to neutralize Von Miller, the things they do offensively, he's hugely valuable. I mean, you get a different looking offense every week. Nobody plays with all five receivers out eligible against Denver because no one's going to block Von Miller one-on-one. He gets more attention paid to him than any defender in the NFL because J.J. Watt has – it might be because Jadeveon Clowney's opposite J.J. Watt. And Aaron Donald, he plays inside. It's harder to pay attention to an inside guy than an edge guy. It's not as much as you can do schematically inside. So Von Miller – to me, that's the definition of valuables. If you're still a playmaker, you're still a high level physically, and teams make more adjustments for you, opponents do, than anyone else, that to me means you're the most valuable defensive player in football.
What do you think? Do you think it's still a defense that can play near their 2015 form?
I do. Yeah, that's a really solid front seven they have. They had a stretch early in the year where they just were horrible against the run, and so it kind of shaped the narrative of, hey, what's going on with Denver? But when you look at their aggregate, they were very good in run defense, and they're very talented in run defense, and they've got the edge rusher. So I do think, yeah, I think they're a lot closer than people would imagine. And if they have a serviceable offense this season, they'll compete for at least a wild card spot, and then once you get in, who knows from there kind of deal.
I want to touch on one more thing with this defense before we talk about the offense just a little bit. But Vic Fangio, they made an investment in linebackers in Chicago. They don't quite have the same guys in Denver. I like Brandon Marshall, who they reportedly might be moving on from. I like Todd Davis. They don't seem like Fangio guys. They don't seem like essentially they don't seem like three down guys.
They probably are not. Todd Davis has gotten better in coverage, but he's not a true three-down guy. Brandon Marshall, actually, last year became just a dime defender for them. He didn't even play in their nickel stuff. He had some injuries last year. He'll probably be gone. As you said, they'll probably move on from him. They need to get better at linebacker. That'll be a big deal. I think they're okay at safety. What's interesting with Fangio, and by the way, we probably needed to talk about him earlier. That's the greatest evidence of all that you feel you're ready to win right now because you're not bringing in Vic Fangio to establish your culture for 2023 when he's a rising coach. He's 60 years old. So yeah. Fangio, and he's got Ed Donatell with him, his DB coach. It's the way they teach it. They can make average players good. You can tell they do because they did it in Chicago for a number of years. Prince Amukamara was not a solid starting corner when he was a New York Giant. He was a fringe starter that gave up a lot of plays. So Eddie Jackson's a fifth-round pick. He's now a starter for the Bears, all-pro guy for the Bears. So it's also in the way they teach it. I think they can make the guys they have a little bit better. I'll also tell you this. I remember when Fangio first went to Chicago. He had just come from San Francisco, I believe, and somebody asked him how you feel about I'm not going to name the player, but how do you feel about the player? And he said, and this is at the combine, so Fangio's probably only been on the job for about 3 weeks. And he said, slow, mediocre athletically, can't play. And that was it for that guy. He didn't play again for Denver, or excuse me, for Chicago. So
for Chicago.
Fangio probably already knows exactly what he wants to do with this defense. My sense is he gets to these opinions pretty efficiently.
It's interesting on offense. You have Philip Lindsay ended up being a star as an undrafted free agent rookie last year. Cortland Sutton, I think, showed you some exciting things, and he was a guy who a lot of people said was interesting long term, maybe not a short term contributor. But those guys are sort of forced in there because of a lot of injuries they had on the offense side of the ball. You have Flacco plus perhaps a rookie quarterback coming in. How good can they be offensively if they're schemed more effectively? And I guess my second part of that question would be, is this offensive line going to be any good?
That needs to be the first part of the question, because that's going to dictate a lot of what goes on. There's this talk around the Flacco move that, well, hey, give him a strong running game and a good defense, he's Joe Flacco again. Why are we operating under the assumption that Denver is going to have a strong running game? I know Philip Lindsay's a good-looking player and had a very nice rookie season. They've got some running backs, but you need an offensive line if you're going to have a strong running game in today's NFL, and they have an average offensive line at best and one that needs some upgrading at guard, and you don't know what their scheme's going to look like until they get the guard. I guess it will be their Scangarella outside zone running scheme no matter what, but you don't know what exact identity and shape that running game will take until you get the guard position figured out, because guard is where your schematic flexibility usually comes from.
All right. The draft's going to be fascinating with them. I really think they're if the quarterback they like is sitting there at 10, and look, teams are going to trade up into the top 10 to probably snag someone. You have the Giants and Jaguars picking at 6 and 7. Both those teams are in the quarterback market. Drew Lock is who's being connected to them, the Missouri prospect. Kyler Murray, lots in common with John Elway, former baseball player. Turned highly regarded quarterback. So
that's about the extent of what they have in common, Gary.
that is probably about it. All right, Andy, before we wrap this show up, we have the news hour condensed into 5 minutes because we are that good. But we had some other news besides Joe Flacco earlier this week since our last show, or I should say earlier last week. Kareem Hunt to Cleveland. And before we get into the X's and O's of this, Jenny Vrentis wrote a piece for the MMQB. You can kind of find it as far as the off the field stuff goes with Kareem Hunt, which obviously is significant. But the title of her piece is Kareem Hunt Could Have Earned His Way Back into the NFL, but not this quickly. And I think that sort of matches up with our general sentiments on the signing. But let's talk about the football aspects of it, because look, this is a team that already had Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson, and now they add Kareem Hunt, yeah, who was originally drafted by John Dorsey in Kansas City. Hunt, we assume, will serve a suspension and then sometime around midseason join the team. But they're all cheap, or I should say the two young guys are cheap. Duke Johnson makes a little bit more, but Freddie Kitchens does find a way to get two backs on the field.
He does. And last year they got really good at putting three backs on the field at times, and nobody was ready for that. And it's not a fullback. When we say backs, we're talking running backs, full-fledged multidimensional players. And Duke Johnson, if he's there, and the tea leaves seem to suggest he won't be, which I find a little head-scratching. Because I was going to say, if he is there, that's a slot receiver type of guy for you as well.
Yeah.
So, and Chubb, that's what's interesting, is who starts? Is it going to be Hunt or is it going to be Chubb?
At this point, you'd say Chubb just because Chubb has been there. I guess it's the old thing. I would say this late in the year. If you got a guy with fresh legs, especially a big back with fresh legs coming in November and December, there's a little bit of an edge there. And perhaps that was Nick Chubb a little bit last year after they moved on from Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, perhaps. I think Chubb has better breakaway speed than Hunt, and that's not everything, but that's also not nothing.
All right, one more thing, Andy. Your free agent rankings coming out on the MMQB this week. Give us a quick preview. Give us the top five, and give us a guess on which guy you think is most likely to move around, because obviously some of these guys will indeed be franchise tagged.
So you want me, it seems like if I give top five, that like, what's their reason for clicking on it?
Because there's 100. You're given 5%.
So someone's going to click because they're eager to see who's 17 or who's 19?
See, you submitted without putting the numbers next to the guys. So I kind of want to be like, Andy, give me number 37 and just see if you can get it right.
I did submit without putting the number because what I found is something like Pierre Garçon getting released or Brandon Marshall maybe getting released. Well, okay, let's slide him in there at number 62. Oh, shoot, now we got to change a number for every guy after him. So I did put it in with no numbers. I don't think I'm going to give this one up, Gary. I'm not giving you the top five.
Can you give me number 37, though? Can you give me number 37?
Number 37 is Demetrius Harris.
Oh, my goodness, you are right. You're right. I can't believe that. He's also nestled in here between Sue Fitzgerald, Adrian Amos, all these other big names.
Is that really who I had at 37?
That is who you have at 37. I did do a very quick count, but with what you submitted, and it might change later. And
yeah,
I will call you out on social media if it turns out I miscounted. That'll be your fault for some reason. But
yep. No, that's a good way to end the show then. And then if you want to hear the top five, you've got to click. You probably need to click multiple times just to help us out. I don't know why you'd have to click multiple times. We need clicks. We're desperate. Please.
Go on different devices and make sure they each have their own independent IP address. That's really the best way to absorb Andy Monoit's top 100 free agents. Let me ask you this then, Andy. Le'Veon Bell, who did make the top 100, I'll spoil that. Who is your ideal landing spot for Le'Veon Bell?
We keep hearing the I happen to think, I guess this will give away one of the top. I happen to think Tevin Coleman's better than Le'Veon Bell. So if you say ideal landing spot, I'm thinking first about Tevin Coleman and then about Le'Veon Bell.
All right, well, what's your ideal landing spot for Tevin Coleman then?
For Tevin Coleman?
Give me a take.
The Tevin Coleman free agency watch. We've heard so much about the Jets. The Jets need to get better schemed offensively. That's why they made a change on offense at coordinator. Offensive head coach, it's Adam Gase who's in there now. But I think giving Gase loves flexible receiving backs. I think giving him one of those would be a nice way to start off his tenure.
Okay. I like it. That's going to be a wrap for the show, Andy. And I do, before I do the wrap-up here, I want to apologize to everyone for yelling so loud when Andy said Demetrius Harris, but I was that shocked that he hit the shot on that one. That's going to do it. Thanks to our sponsor for this show, Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Get a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart every weekend. Thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Albert, Jenny, and Connor will be here on Wednesday to break down whatever news breaks this week. And you know you're going to have some news break on Monday, Tuesday this week because that's just how the NFL goes these days. We'll have some mini mailbags coming up in future shows. Send those questions into talkback@themmqb.com or get us on Twitter or Facebook. To get our show as well as the Wednesday show once the season starts, the Deep Dive show and the Gambling show, be sure to subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.